This is a production of the Z-Talk Radio Network. The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Z-Talk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
Wow. It's dark. Well, let's have some light on the subject.
Put on your critical thinking caps and please refrain from hugging. It's time for Dimland Radio with your host, Jim Dr. Dim Fitzsimmons.
Hello and welcome to Dimland Radio here on the Z-Talk Radio Network at ztalkradio.com. I am your host, Jim Dr. Dim Fitzsimmons. Remember, I'm not really a doctor. I just play doctor online. I figured I'd start with just a little update about my mom. Last week I told you she got a pacemaker. She became a bionic woman. And she was still having some anxiety stuff. She did end up in the hospital one more time with an anxiety issue. She spent overnight. They worked on medications and trying to figure out what they need to do to kind of keep her level and get some sleep. And with my mom, her panic attacks or anxiety attacks, however you want to call them, they seem to launch from her being worried about not sleeping. And so they've been working with helping her to get to sleep and things of that nature. She's home. She's been home for most of the week. As far as I know, things have been going okay. They gave her a little bit of a stronger sleeping medicine to help her sleep. And then she's going to get in-home care visits as part of a rehabbing at home. And at first she refused to get it, but then she's thought about it some more, and she's thought, you know, it's probably a good idea that I get the in-home care. So they called up to get that started. Yes, let's do that, and then I'll do that. And so she has to stay home. For a bit there, I was kind of confused. And why would she have to stay home? It's just be there for when the home care person comes in, and then you got the rest of the week or whatever to do what you want. Well, my younger brother explained, because he has someone that is part of someone he knows, their family, had this, you know, the agreement was instead of going into some kind of a rehab center, they go home and rehab at home. And it means they have to stay home for a period of time while they recuperate and while they strengthen or do whatever the task that the doctors wants the patient to do. And then they send in a home care medical specialist to come over and to help with that, a nurse of some sort. And that was the agreement. So I was a little confused then. My younger brother explained it, that that's what's going on. So, well, then that makes sense. Why mom kept saying, well, I can't leave the house. Well, she can if she wants to get her hair cut, if there's, you know, there's a couple allowances. But for the most part, they want her to stay in the house until this process has gotten through. So there's that, and then there's also the siblings, the kids, have had some discussions on what we should be doing going forward because our parents are getting old, and there's certain eventualities that we need to prepare for. So it's something that families all over the world are faced with at some point as they have aging parents, that there's something that needs to be figured out about how to make the transitions into different parts of life as they come about in those golden years. I dropped by tonight, earlier tonight. I was driving by the house and I didn't see the living room light on. I thought, hey, aren't they supposed to be home? And it was after 8. I was finishing up work and I was heading home. And I thought, well, I'll pop in. So I go around to the back and I see that my mom's She has a little sitting room that she watches TV and does her coloring and puzzles in the paper and things like that. I see the lights on in there, so I go in. So, well, Dad has been spending time in that room with her, just watching whatever on TV. Mom says, I let your father watch whatever he wants to watch. I'm just glad that he's sitting in here with me, and it's nice to have him here. You know, that's nice. So I stopped by, and we visited for a little bit and just saw what's going on and how she's doing and that kind of thing. But I just felt a little weird because I drove by the house, and, hey, that light's not on in the front room. It's a little early for Dad going to bed. Well, turns out that's what the reason was. They're hanging out together a little bit more. And then as I was leaving, and this is just, you know, my dad took me aside and just said, I'm really glad you stopped by tonight. It's what your mom needed. You know, just to have somebody else other than me to talk to have you come in and have that, I mean me, you know, my dad's telling me this, come in and just, you know, talk and get her, you know, it's get our minds off things and help. That helps. And I said, well, hey, you know, I just wanted to, thought I should check in. So, okay. So that's where it's at right now. Let's hope it stays there. There's been some more unrest in the country in the last few days. The center point of this one is Kenosha, Wisconsin. I'm not going to go into the deep details or anything like that because I don't know enough of them, but it's, you know, police shootings. African-American kid was shot. And then tensions are high, and you know, some stuff has happened. Some rioting, some breaking of windows and that kind of thing had happened here in Minneapolis over the last night or two. There was a curfew set last night just as precaution, and it's a... I wish I had easy answers. I don't. It's just... And in the aftermath of the Kenosha police incident, there, you know, stuff's going on, and people came from out of state. You know, they talk about how the people that are causing the trouble, you know, that the rioters, let's say, which started out peacefully. And as the evening comes, it gets riotous. And that is that because the police stepped in and sparked things, or is it just, who knows? I don't know. But they say, oh, they come from out of state just to cause trouble. Well, we do know that some other people came from out of state to protect property with their guns, and one of them was a 17-year-old kid who's been accused of shooting a couple of people, you know, we'll say in self-defense, killed a couple people, that's what he's accused of, and he's a white kid, and we saw him walking around, he's got a gun hanging around off his shoulder, and police cars are zooming by, and this, I think, is after he's done some shooting, and he raises his hands, but the cop cars go right by him. I don't think they would have gone right by him if he had been black. I don't know that to be the case, but I don't think that would have happened. And so that we're still seeing some strange things. And the strangest thing was some of the Republican National Convention, which just took place, where half of the keynote speakers were related to the president. That seems rather North Korean-ish to me. I will say this to you now. I'm beginning to feel it again. He's going to get reelected. I know. I had said that after he was impeached. I said he's now become the second elected president to have been impeached. Bill Clinton was the first. Andrew Johnson was the first president ever to be impeached, but he was not elected. He assumed office when Abraham Lincoln was assassinated. And, you know, he was impeached. So there's three presidents who have been impeached, and Donald Trump is one of them. And I said after the acquittal by the Senate, doesn't mean he wasn't impeached. He was still impeached. He's been an impeached president. The Senate laid down and said, okay. But one senator, Mitt Romney, stood up and said, No, I can't. I have to vote to convict. I have to go with my conscience. He betrayed the trust, and he should not be president. And he knew that, you know, he's the one Republican senator that voted to boot him, to convict him. And the rest of them just said, nope, not going to do it. He learned his lesson. He learned his lesson with the impeachment. He'll be a good boy now. He learned his lesson. Yep, that's how it is. And I was talking to my parents about this earlier tonight, and I said, you know, it's at this point, or at that point when it happened, that just, God damn it, why did John McCain have to die? If he was still alive, I think I'm correct in this. If he were still alive, he would have stood with Mitt Romney, and all the rest of stuff the same. He would have stood with Mitt Romney and voted to convict President Trump after the impeachment. And I think because it was John McCain, and he held a lot more weight with the Senate than Mitt Romney did, I think there would be other Republicans that would have come in line. I think McCain would have gotten up there and said, uh-uh, nope, he's betrayed the trust. But McCain died, so we don't have his voice. We don't have it. I think he would have. I don't think he, but I don't know. I guess we'll never know. So, and I said after that acquittal by the Senate, I said, okay, so he's now the second president to have been elected and impeached. He's the second. He will be the first president to have been impeached, to have been elected, impeached, and reelected. And I'm back there again. It's just the pessimist in me, I guess, that just cannot. I just see it. I don't understand how his supporters don't see his flaws. I don't understand it. They just, if you corner on something, they'll just turn around and tell you fake news. And maybe I'm being unfair. It's just, I just don't. I think he's going to get reelected. I was talking with a friend today, and the friend said he says, you know, he said to me, Jim, he says, I really do think he could shoot somebody, he could kill somebody on Fifth Avenue in New York City on camera. Everybody sees him, do it live on television, and his supporters would still say, yep. They'd probably say, well, that person had it coming. Had it coming. Yeah, they deserved it. That's the kind of president we've got, the kind of get stuff done. You know, it's just, I think he might be right. We thought Reagan was the Teflon president. And the buck doesn't stop with Trump. No, he's not responsible for anything. The buck doesn't stop with him. No way. Anyway, that's what I'm seeing. Maybe I'm at a low point. That's what I'm seeing. I'm just seeing, I told you I have a fantasy, a dream to see the board, the election board, all lit up blue. Every state, Texas, Florida, Alaska, every state lit up blue. A redux of 1984, except it goes blue instead of red. Now, 1984, I must bring this up, talk about this since I brought it up. 1984 was the first year that I was able to vote for president. And if you've forgotten, it was Ronald Reagan running for his second term against former Vice President Walter Mondale. Mondale was the Vice President with Jimmy Carter, who Reagan beat in 1980. And Mondale got the nomination. And Walter Mondale is a native from Minnesota, a native Minnesotan, I should say. Not a native from his, he's a native Minnesotan. And, of course, Minnesota's like, it's our guy. And Minnesota, coincidentally, was the only state he carried in 1984. It's the only state. I think he also carried Washington, D.C. that was it. Everything else was red. So my friend John, a friend from high school, he and I went and voted together. And he said, now, once we did that, and later on, we said, we have to go to the Civic Center, the St. Paul Civic Center, downtown St. Paul. Because that was where Walter Mondale was going to be, you know, celebrating his victory. That was the hope. But even then, even before the election, we were pretty sure that Reagan was going to win in a landslide. We were pretty sure it was an uphill battle for Walter. And so John and I, we did. We went to the Civic Center. John said, hey, we should do it. It's a once-in-a-lifetime chance to be there with the guy that, you know, was, at least I'd seen in person a former vice president, seen them. And so we went and we hung out. We walked in as this is memory, and memory's not videotaped, so it might not be accurate. But from what I can recall, I think we went down there. The polls were closed in Minnesota, and we went on in, and they had monitors all over the place, TV monitors all over the place, and we just saw red maps of the United States, you know, of all those areas where the states had, the polls had closed and been called for Reagan. We just saw it. It was just like, and then so we hung out, and we waited for a while, and then at some point, Mondale came in with his family, and walked up the long, you know, gently sloping ramp up to the stage, and you know, gave his concession speech, and said the thing is like, okay, we wish Ronald Reagan well. We ran a good campaign. I'm proud of the organization and all that kind of stuff. And he says we are Americans. We move forward together. Ronald Reagan will be our president, and we hope he does well. That kind of stuff. Which is not what you're going to hear from Trump. Should he lose in this upcoming election, he will not sound like that. So, you know, well, maybe. It might surprise you. I don't know. So, and one of the funny things of the moment of the of Mondale's family coming in and walking up there was, you know, it's up front is Walter and his wife, and then their kids with the daughter Eleanor Mondale, who was quite young at the time. Well, not real young. She was older than me, I suppose, but she was young and she was, you know, attractive. And the crowd would surge to shake hands with Walter, you know, but when it just seemed to me that the crowd surged just a little bit more when Eleanor got by. Ooh! It could just be me creating a memory that isn't true, but I remember chuckling to myself at that at the time. So that's what we can hope for. Well, I'm going to take a break, and I will be back because I want to take a break, and I do that in this show so I can have a sip of beer and just kind of relax for a minute or two. And when I get back, I'm going to try to be fair.
Listen to Z Talk Radio on ztalkradio.com.
Don't just take my word for it, but you are listening to Dimland Radio on Z Talk Radio Network. Do you believe in ghosts? Do you think Bigfoot is real? Do you suspect that your neighbor is really Val Tor, leader of the lizard people of Bendar 3? Well, Dr. Dim doesn't, and he'll tell you why when you tune in to Dimland Radio Saturday nights, 11 Central, midnight Eastern on Z-Talk Radio Network. It's an hour of science promotion, pop culture rants, personal observation, and of course, skepticism. Join Jim, Dr. Dim Fitzsimmons, Saturday nights, 11 Central, midnight Eastern for Dimland Radio on Z-Talk Radio Network.
If this station's not your cup of tea, Then drink coffee!
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 Coffee! Drink coffee!
100% news.
100%
information.
100% guarantee.
Thought you might say that.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Welcome back to Dimland Radio here on the ZTalk Radio Network at ztalkradio.com. I realize I didn't give the proper sign-off before going into that break. Jeez. Almost jumped back in, but I didn't want to interrupt the Talking Heads tune that was playing us out. So, yeah. You're okay with that, aren't you? All right. Now, okay, to be fair, across the social media in the aftermath of the Democratic National Convention, which took place week before this past week, right? Or was it, it took place. To be fair, there is a claim going around the social media saying that in the DNC, the Democratic National Convention, whenever the Pledge of Allegiance was recited, they had which apparently it was done frequently throughout the throughout those 3 or 4 days that they have their sort of convention. It was like a Zoom thing, not a lot of audience as far as in front of a live audience kind of thing. It was mostly in little areas with maybe a few people watching, but mostly the speakers just speaking and trying to keep things flowing. But with time delays and stuff, it got a little awkward here and there. But, and I guess, as far as I know, they started each day with a Pledge of Allegiance. And what they would do is these video montages of it. They would have all kinds of American diversity of people shown in them doing segments of the Pledge of Allegiance, cutting through all the way through. And the claim is that the Democrats took the two words "under God" out of the Pledge of Allegiance for the DNC, which USA Today, the fact checkers there, looked at it and said, no, that's not true. I could play the "it's not true" theme, but it's not true. The Democrats did not take "under God" out of the pledge. They had three or four videos that they posted these things on the page in USA Today online, and I'll link to that on the show notes. You can get to that by going to dimland.com and clicking on the show notes. I'll link to it so you can watch it. And they have, one of them is this cute little kid doing it all on his own. And he says, "under God." And everybody says, "under God." It's there. It's there. So it's just a complete lie that it's not there. Now, when I posted this on Facebook, I posted it under the "to be fair," as part of the fact checking. I posted that up. And most people, commented positively about it. There was one person that commented, and this person happens to be someone that's fairly high up in the skeptical movement. It's fairly prominent in the skeptical movement, such it is these days. And he has, on occasion, commented on my posts. And from what I've seen him comment, he might have a certain conservative viewpoint, not necessarily liberal, it seems like it might be. And he was saying, he was claiming that the that the post that I put up was misleading because the Democrats they took under God out of the pledge when they do their council meetings or something. And I had, I fired back, I responded by saying the claim was not whether or not the Democrats say it at their council meetings. The claim was that the under God words were not part of the Pledge of Allegiance during the Democratic National Convention. So, I don't know. I don't know if they don't say it in there. Now, I've talked about this in the past. I'm an atheist. And from an atheist point of view, having under God in there is not welcome. And I've talked about this in the past, being that it's kind of ironic that the placement of the words under God, because it's jammed into the Pledge of Allegiance, which hadn't been around for a while. Been around for a while, and sometime in the 50s, as a way to show those godless commies over in the Soviet Union that we ain't godless. Oh, I hate those commies. We put under God in there. We put an in God that we trust in our money. So we got the under God into the Pledge of Allegiance. Stuffed it in there. We stuck it in there in the part of the pledge that says one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. We stuck it in between the one nation and indivisible. We jammed it in there, which is in itself putting a lie to the indivisible part, because we're lopping out a whole segment of the population of the United States. We are pushing them out of the tent. We are saying you don't have a place at the table when we throw under God in there. We are saying that we are divisible. There are those of us who believe in God, and you guys are included in this. Of course, it tends to be a particular God. But those of you who believe in multiple gods or don't believe in any gods, you're out. Okay, your viewpoints are not included in our pledge. We had to push this little religion thing in there. And those of you without religion, you're screwed. Okay? We don't care. No room for you at the table. And if you have multiple gods, you can go join them at the kids' table in the other room. So from my perspective as an atheist, I don't think under God should be in there as it is. Now, I suppose we can go even wider. Do we need a Pledge of Allegiance? But okay. So to be fair, the Democrats didn't take under God out of the pledge during the Democratic National Convention. Okay? Now, to be fair, there's another story that's been roaming around the social media. Another claim that's been roaming around. And that claim is that First Lady Melania Trump, who has overseen the renovations of the Rose Garden, the White House Rose Garden, has chopped down the cherry trees that were in that Rose Garden. The cherry trees that were planted by Jackie Kennedy back in 1962, when Jackie Kennedy did renovations of the Rose Garden. Jackie didn't actually plant them, and Melania didn't actually cut down the cherry trees. Well, they had somebody else do it. Okay. Well, it's not true. Again, I could have played the it's not true theme, but I'm doing to be fair. First off, they weren't cherry trees, they were crabapple trees. That's the first correction. And again, this comes from the USA Today online site. And they link to stuff on there. So I'll link to it. Go to dimland.com, go to the show notes, and you'll find the links to the USA Today articles, and you'll be able to link to their sources and all that. So, okay. So they were crabapple trees. And they were not cut down. They were, unplanted. They were taken up out of the garden and were removed, put somewhere where they can be cared for, and then relocated somewhere else on the White House grounds. That's what USA Today has put it, and that's what, and they were citing whatever their source was saying. That's the plans of what to do with these crabapple trees. And why were the crabapple trees taken out of the gardens? Well, as recently as the 1980s, when Nancy Reagan was the first lady, there were talks of doing renovating the Rose Garden area and removing the crabapple trees because they were beginning to overgrow the garden. So, but I guess nothing. I guess it didn't happen then. Iran-Contra probably got in the way or something. Who knows? But for whatever reason, it didn't happen. So now with Melania in there, they redid the deal. And what they did was, when these renovations, was to return the Rose Garden to the footprint that it had pre-1962, before the 1962 renovations that Jackie Kennedy oversaw. There's another claim, further claim in there. Not only did Melania cut down the cherry trees, but she also, destroyed or uprooted or got rid of, century-old rose bushes that had been planted by Ellen Wilson back in 1913. She was the first lady at that time. She was Woodrow Wilson's wife. And if you know some history about Woodrow Wilson, he had a stroke of some kind, something that made him kind of put him out of commission for a little bit, and his wife did a lot of the governing. It was a secret. There was people that she worked with, but she kind of filled in for him. That's if I have my history correct. I hope I do. But anyway, so it's that's not true either, because USA Today, they consulted a horticulturalist who says that roses are fussy. Rose bushes are not going to last 100 years. You're going to need to replace them. And so it's not likely that the rose bushes that might have been removed because they were dying or aging out or whatever needed to be replaced. It's not likely that they were planted by Ellen Wilson or whoever she had do it. So it's not true that they were cherry trees or crab apples. They were removed and they will be replanted, and the rose bushes were not taken out from 1930s. That stuff's not true. And the other thing about this renovation, bringing it back to the footprint that it had in pre-1962, was also to make it more compliant with the Americans with Disabilities Act. It was also what they did in this renovation. So, okay. All right, so to be fair, you don't need to be making stuff up about Melania Trump because everybody hates the Trumps. Now, I will say this, and hopefully I will still be seeming to be fair here. I had at least one person who's a friend, someone I know and is personally a friend, say something about the renovations, the way the gardens look now, is ugly. And I said, well, that's subjective. That's your point of view. Somebody else might look at it and say, it's wonderful. It's delightful. And I also, and this is me trying to say, are you saying that because of who did it? Would you have had the same reaction if it was Michelle Obama who did the same renovations while her husband was president? Would you have had the same reaction as you're having to it being Melania Trump who was in charge of this? Or would you have said, oh, it's delightful? I mean, think about it. Think about, I had another person mention that a lot of this is like team sports. It's my team, and I'm happy for my team. And I don't like what the other teams do. But, try to give some credit where it's due, blame where it's due, and try to see if geez, am I being objecting to this because I just don't like the person who did it? So, yeah, and it's subjective. Some people don't like the way roses look. Some people don't, you know, would rather have the crabapple trees taking over everything. But that's just, you know, I don't know. It's just on a personal opinion. So try not to, you know, well, just see. Am I clouding this by being upset about who did it and not exactly what was done? Anyway. All right, so that's to be fair. Just to be fair. Now I'm going to take a break. You are listening to Dimland Radio at Z-Talk Radio Network. I'm going to take my second break. This is your host, Jim, Dr. Dim Fitzsimmons. I will return shortly.
Other guys.
The finger.
You're listening to Z-Talk Radio Network.
Are you looking for a science-based medical podcast to answer all your questions about health? Check out The Body of Evidence. Whether you're curious about the potential benefits of omega-3s or the potential risks of vaping, we take a look at the body of evidence to separate the noise, the hype, the lies from actual scientific rigor. We do it with comedy skits.
The only logical thing to do is for me to take off all my clothes and run into the street.
No, remember the first rule of podcasting. Always keep your pants on.
With jingles.
Some are thrilled, some are not. You'll lose that hair if you stop. Propitia.
And by, you know, discussing what the evidence has to say on the topic at hand.
Or unless that is a pill. But yeah, it has the side effects of bloating, gas, and greasy stool, which makes it very unpleasant.
The Body of Evidence. Find it at bodyofevidence.ca or on your favorite podcast app. The Body of Evidence. Medicine that tastes funny and science made easy.
He's endlessly pushing the rock of reason up the hill of paranormal. It's Dr. Dim, and you're listening to Dimland Radio on Z-Talk Radio Network.
You're listening to Z-Talk Radio Network.
Welcome back to Dimland Radio here on the Z-Talk Radio Network at ztalkradio.com. I'm your host, Jim, Dr. Dim Fitzsimmons. I just wrote the word talk 4 times. It's writing into my show notes book here, my show prep book, and I write down the names of the songs that I play as the bumpers in and out of breaks. And I just wrote talk, 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 talk. Because that song was a song called Talk, Talk by the band Talk, Talk. See? So I just wrote talk, 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 talk. Isn't that interesting? That's interesting. That's why you tune in to Dimland Radio, to get these little things, isn't it? Okay. As you may know, longtime listeners to my show know that I work for a comic book store part-time, about 10 hours a week. And what I do is I go in each Saturday. I bring in a box of about 100 comic books, 150 comic books that I had taken home the week before, bring them in, and I put them on the shelves and everything. Now, what I had done with them in that previous week was I brought them home, and I go into our online catalog, and I enter in those books into the inventory so that when people order stuff online, you know, they can see that they've got that book now and get the stuff. So I've been doing that. We shut the store down for about a month or so, but then we started back to doing that, and we are now doing in-store sales on weekends, Saturdays and Sundays. The owner of the store is doing what he can to make that viable. Up until this, and then that started last weekend. Up until then, what we had done was mail orders. We'd mail stuff out, or if people wanted to pick some up at the store, they could set up an appointment, and the boss would be there and get, you know, meet them and, you know, bring them out curbside or whatever. So we'll see how we can go, because, you know, this pandemic has, you know, it's still here. It's still something. COVID is still a thing, y'all. So, you know, well, and I enjoy, so I enter them in line, bring them to the store, put them away, and then grab another batch, bring it home, enter it online, bring them to the store. You know, I do that each week. And I kind of enjoy that, especially when I'm working with Marvel comics, because those are the comic books that I particularly enjoy. But the DC comics that I'll do, and Harvey's and all those, they have their enjoyment. Well, I was working on a batch of comic books this past week, and I got to one. It was a Marvel comic book. It's the Daredevil title, Man Without Fear. It's issue number 133, with the cover date of May 1976. And I didn't notice it at first, but as I started to enter in the information that I'll enter, I'll put in all sorts of information, really, whether we have it, you know, what's the price, what's the condition, what grade has been given, you know, what condition is it in, and then I'll put in stuff like, you know, who drew the cover, who wrote the book, who's the artist for the interior pages, that kind of stuff. I'll put in, you know, and what characters appear in the comic book. I'll put that information in there too. So I got to this one, and there had been some information previously entered for this particular comic book, and I just update it with whatever new information I can put in there. And I noticed a name in there, and under the appearances. And the name was Uri Geller. 70s spoon-bending sensation, Uri Geller. A fellow from Israel who may have gotten his powers from extraterrestrials, who imbued him with these psychic powers and telekinetic powers and telepathy and all, whatever he would claim, which manifested itself in bending spoons and keys, drawing pictures that, you know, that somebody else has drawn, you know, just kind of doing that, getting stopwatches to start, and let's see, what was another trick? Predicting which of several little film canisters, you know, kids, back in the day, we had this stuff called film that you would put in cameras and you would take pictures with that, and the film would be exposed to the light, and the little picture would then be transferred to that film, and then you take that film and you bring it to somebody who would develop it into actual pictures. They would develop the film into negatives, and from there they could make photographs for you. That's what they did in the old days. And that film would come in these little canisters. Sometimes they'd be little metal canisters, or they'd be plastic canisters, but they were these little, you know, I don't know, 2 feet, or 2 feet, 2 inches tall, inch and a half, you know, circular thing. And what Uri would do is they'd have, you know, somebody would fill one with water, and they'd set it out with 10 of them on a plate or something, and Uri would just kind of shift the plate around and look around, and he'd find the one that had water in it. That was a trick he did. And he had a couple others, I think. And he became a media sensation all over the place. He was really something. It's just, oh, look at this guy. He's got this paranormal ability. He fooled the scientists at the Stanford Research Institute, which isn't affiliated with Stanford University. But when they say Stanford, people think, oh, Stanford. Fooled a couple scientists over there whose field is not psychology or physics or something. It's lasers, I guess. That's what they were. That's the science, kind of scientists they were. Fooled them. You know, and bending keys and bending spoons, and it's okay. Well, so this comic book comes out in 1976, and that's at the height of Geller's Gellerness. And I looked at it and said, you're kidding me. The cover. Okay, and I will put this on the show notes page. You can get it there and see the cover. It shows Daredevil bouncing around this futuristic-looking tank with a glass dome on the top of it. And there's some character inside the glass dome. And Daredevil's seen jumping around, and he's being shot at by the tank. And the fellow inside the glass dome inside the tank is saying, no matter which way you turn, Daredevil, you can't escape Mindwave and his fearsome think tank. That's comic books for you. Mindwave is an ESP guy. He's got psychic abilities, and he can do stuff, right? And he can predict what he can read Daredevil's mind. So he knows which way Daredevil's going to jump. He knows what punch he's going to throw. He knows what he's going to do because he could read he'd read his mind. See? So then on the cover, so the cover shows that tank. It shows Daredevil jumping around and some people running in fear. And there's one fellow in the lower right-hand corner of the comic book cover. He's got his hand up in the air and he's in profile and he's looking concerned. He's looking at Daredevil. And there's a narration box that's drawn in the shape of an arrow. You know, the right side of the box is pointing to the guy. And it says, "A city in danger. And only one man can help. The most shocking guest star of all, the incomparable Uri Geller." And I thought, what's he going to do? Bend spoons? Daredevil, you need help? Here, let me bend these spoons for you. Think of an object. Draw something for me. And just picture it in your mind, and I'll draw it for you. Can I find water in a film canister? Do you have a film canister on you? I'll find which one has water in it. Can that help? Seriously? So I, of course, had to read this. So I took it out of its bag and I sat down and I read it. And, okay, so what Uri would do, he would do these tricks, right? And he'd bend a spoon. And he'd bend it with his mind. But for some reason, he had to hold it in his hands. If you're going to bend this spoon, Uri, I've got a spoon. I'll hold the spoon in my hand. I'll hold it over here. You stay about 4 feet away from me so you can't touch the spoon. Now, I want you to bend it with your mind. And he wouldn't be able to do it. And he'd say, well, my negative energy is interfering with his bullshit. So, okay. And so when he bends a spoon, it's because he physically bends the spoon. He knows what to do as a magician to misdirect people, direct their attention somewhere else while he's bending the spoon with his hands, and physically bending the spoon. And then he holds the spoon in such a way so that the scooper part of the spoon is in his hand, and then he takes his finger to the handle of the spoon, which looks like it's held you know, straight level, you know, parallel to the ground, right? And so he starts rubbing this spot on the spoon, and the spoon starts to bend upward. As he does this, he's rubbing it with his free hand that's not holding the spoon, with a finger just kind of rubbing it. So the person's eyes looking at the finger rubbing back and forth on the spoon, and looking at the spoon going up into the air, but they're not looking at what his other hand's doing. Because what he's doing is, he's already bent the spoon. He's already done that. He's holding the scooping part, and he's just subtly moving the hand that he's holding the spoon with so that he's shifting it so that the handle starts to appear to be bending upward. And then he takes it off his hand. Look, see, it's bent. See, look, it's bent. And everybody goes, oh, look, he bent the spoon. That's great. How's that going to help us? That's what he does. And then there's tricks that he does to do the drawing thing, you know, and you know, things that he does. And James Randi, the amazing Randi, has done some exposing of Geller. In fact, in 1973, Geller was already making a name for himself around the world. Everybody's all thrilled about Geller. And Johnny Carson is the king of late night television. He has Uri as a guest on The Tonight Show. And Johnny has a background of being a magician. And he was seeing what was going on. And he thought, this is bullshit. He was friends with James Randi. So he contacts Randi. And he says, I want to have him on. I want to, you know, just see, how can we keep him from doing his tricks? So the main thing that Randi did for them was, he said, you need to supply all the stuff that you want him to work with. You need to supply it. And you don't let him or any of his people have any contact with it until he's on camera. And you don't, you know, you just set it up. So they got it all set up, and he was flummoxed. He got on there. He couldn't do a thing. He sat next between Johnny and Ricardo Montalban, who was one of the other guests on the show, sat there between him and couldn't do it. And he was making excuses, and he was, you know, just like, boy, I feel like I'm being pressured. And Johnny said, no, I just want you to, you know, just go ahead. Just take your time. Go ahead. They went to a commercial break. They came back. And during the commercial break, Ray was saying, I'm just not feeling strong. I'm just not, you know, feeling it. So, you know, right there in front of millions of people, Geller had a colossal failure. And I was reading about this on the Wikipedia page, and which I'm sure this page was updated by the Guerrilla Skeptics on Wikipedia or whatever. Guerrilla Skepticism on Wikipedia. GSOW. Susan Gerbeck's group of people that go in and they become editors on Wikipedia, and they follow the rules in editing, and they make sure that the pages are clean and good and accurate. And they do a lot of stuff with the bullshit, you know, and counter it. And I'm sure it's been dealt with. So they did say, it, the Wikipedia page says, the Carson performance didn't hurt him. They thought, And Geller was even saying, I'm finished. But no, the Merv Griffin show calls him and has him come on, and they don't control for anything. Now, I tried to find the footage of Geller on the Merv Griffin show, and I couldn't. But I can find the appearance on The Tonight Show. I can find some with James Randi talking about it. And I can find some other stuff with James Randi talking about some other things that Geller's been caught doing. And one of these neat little things that James Randi did, reproducing the trick of drawing something that Barbara Walters had already drawn and had set aside. So and Randi was able to rise to the challenge. Oh, he was a clever man. He's a clever man. anyway, so I'll include links to all this stuff. You can check it out. But Geller went on, and that was 1973. So now he's in a Marvel comic book, and in the comic book, so the story goes. All right, he's in the story. Geller is able to communicate telepathically with the bad guy, with Mindwave. Apparently the two of them had crossed swords before in other parts of the world. And Geller had thwarted him there. And so he can do that. And he can bend. He bends a crowbar. A crowbar. Geller has never bent a crowbar. He bends things that like keys and spoons. Forks, and certain kinds of spoons and forks and ladles and things that have a thinner metal to it. If it's real thick, that's going to be hard to bend. It's going to be hard to just take it and bend it like he does. So he's never bent a crowbar with his mind, but he does it in the comic book. He's got it in his hand, and it bends. And he also bends bars off of that are in front of a window. He has them kind of bend and reach down and grab this mind wave guy and imprison him. He does that. And he senses, you know, at some point he's Daredevil and him are trying to locate this mind wave guy. And Geller's up on the top of a building. He senses, oh, he's over there. He's on the east side, lower east. Oh, he's over there. Whatever. So it's just... That's the stuff he does, and it's just, yeah, in a comic book, well, yeah, you can do anything in a comic book. If you can draw it, you can do it. And, of course, but that's not what real life is. That's not, and they give his little origin where he saw some light and he was imbued with some powers and all this kind of crap. Not only that, on the, in each, comic book back in the day, they probably still do it, there would be some pages set aside inside for checklists of a product that was, you know, books that are coming out that month, so you can see what's coming out, so you can look for them on your newsstand. There's, you know, how, you know, maybe ads to or to become a fan member of Marvel. There's letters to the editors page. There's an editor page where they might give some information about stuff going on. Stan Lee would usually have what he would call his soapbox, where he might do a little editorial. Well, in this issue, the writer of this story and editor of the story, a fellow named Marv Wolfman, that's his name, Wolfman, that's his actual name, wrote up about Uri Geller being in this comic book. And Marv writes that he was called up to Stan Lee's office, and Stan Lee says, he says, Marv, I want to have Uri Geller. We got to get him in a comic book. Oh, that'd be great to get Uri Geller in a comic. He's really hot right now. Let's get him in a comic book. So, okay. So then Marv Wolfman meets Geller at something, and Geller bends one of Marv's keys and somebody else's key, and he does the drawing trick, and Wolfman is completely, you know, floored by this. He's a believer, and he writes up this story and puts him in there. So I'm thinking of buying this one just so I can have it in my collection. It's... You know, I'm in the wrong business or something. I have ethics. I don't pretend to be able to do these tricks. I don't know. But he ends up in a comic book. Good old Uri Geller. Well, he has since kind of said that he does tricks. He'll wink, though. I don't have supernatural powers. And he winks. Yeah, he's kind of done that. He's sued people. He sued James Randi, but it's just so sad to see this and how gullible people are. And you know, Marvel Comics, they already have a character who can read minds. They already have characters that can bend things. They already have that. Professor X, Charles Xavier, the head of the X-Men. He can read minds. Magneto, he's got the ability to, you know, do stuff with metal. He can make it do anything he wants, so he could bend stuff. You know, it's like the Hulk could bend things with his, you know. I mean, in comic books, you can do anything. You can take a mild-mannered scientist and have him get angry and turn into this, you know, sizable green monster of super strength. You can have that happen because it's a comic book. You can have a mild-mannered doctor who has a little bit of a limp and walks with a cane, and when he taps his walking stick on the ground, he becomes the mighty Thor. You can have that in comic books. So why put Geller in there? I don't know. I wonder how it sold. And I wonder if they were thinking, boy, if this is really big, we could do a line of comics of Uri Geller. That would be stupid. Well, you know, it's just it's interesting working at a comic book store. You just never know what you're going to find.
Good night, Herr Doctor.
Good night, Frau Blücher.
The end of another show. Well, as I always say, or I should say, be skeptical, and extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence, especially not the kind of crap that Geller used to give. Good evidence. Be patient, wash your hands, wear a mask, stay home, stay safe, and sleep with the lights off. Oh, and this is Jim Fitzsimmons, Dr. Dim, you know, and it's Dim Lambert. See you next week. Well, I cocked up the end of that. You can check out my show notes at dimland.com. Just click on the blog option. And you can email your questions and comments to drdim@dimland.com. That's drdim@dimland.com. And the opening theme song, Ram, is by Theolius and is used with permission. Thank you.
This has been a production of the Z-Talk Radio Network.
And now, a message to our competitors.
Thanks
for tuning us in.
What?
Well, I'm going to hell.